Translation. Other necessities include invoking the different names of the demigods by specific hymns and vows of recompense in accordance with the particular scripture for specific purposes and by specific processes. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The whole process of offering sacrifice is under the category of fruitive action, and such activities are extremely scientific. They mainly depend on the process of vibrating sounds with a particular accent. It is a great science, and due to being out of proper use for more than 4,000 years, for want of qualified brahmanas, such performances of sacrifice are no longer effective. Nor are they recommended. In this fallen age, any such practice undertaken in this age as a matter of show, may simply be a cheating process by the clever priestly order. But such a show of sacrifices cannot be effective at any stage. Fruitive action is being carried on by the help of material science, and to a little extent by gross material help. But the materialists await a still more subtle advancement in the process of vibrating sounds on which the Vedic hymns are established. Gross material science cannot divert the real purpose of human life. They can only increase the artificial needs of life without any solution to the problems of life. Therefore, the way of materialistic life leads to the wrong type of human civilization. Since the ultimate aim of life is spiritual realization, the direct way of invoking the holy name of the Lord, as mentioned above, is precisely recommended by Lord Chaitanya, and people of the modern age can easily take advantage of this simple process, which is tenable for the condition of the complicated social structure. Namadeyani mantrascha dakshinascha vatanicha devatanukrama kalpa sankalpas tantramevacha. Om Gyanate Vrindasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshan Mintanjina Tasmai Shri Gurveena. So the process of fruitive activities, karma kanda, is being described. Lord Brahma, he is the creator of this system. And therefore he's describing it. He's qualified to do so. And it's very complicated, as we mentioned before. One error in the pronunciation can bring havoc for the person organizing the yajna. Instead of getting what one wants, one may get just the opposite. A big fiery demon may come and eat you up if you chant the mantra improperly, or if your Brahmin chants improperly. Therefore, they had referees, Brahmin referees, to make sure that the mantras were being chanted properly. So nowadays it's not practical. Nowadays, if someone says we're going to have a Ashwamedha sacrifice, won't work. It won't be of any value. In fact, it'll be sinful. Why? Because in order to perform Ashwamedha sacrifice, all the containers, the utensils need to be made of gold. Okay, so where are you going to find even gold plated, what to speak of real gold? Maybe you can find some plastic or brass. When Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna, he sent his four brothers out to conquer the different directions and bring back wealth. And especially one brother came back with extraordinary wealth, and therefore he got the title Dhananjaya. You know who Dhananjaya is? Yes, Arjuna is Dhananjaya, winner of wealth, because he brought back so much wealth. So we don't have the wealth, then we don't have the brahmanas. It's not the age for that sacrifice. That was recommended Not even in Dwapara Yuga was recommended for Treta Yuga. Tretayam yaja makai. Yajato makai. In Treta Yuga, the process is sacrifice. But even in the last age, Dwapara, it's not very suitable for sacrifice. Although on a few occasions it was done. In the case when Krishna was personally present, Yudhisthira Maharaj was able to do it. Otherwise, it would have been very difficult. How would they have even conquered the other kings, such as Jarasandha? How would they have been able to do that without Krishna? It wasn't possible. So, because of Krishna's presence, the Dvapara Yuga was like Treta Yuga. Therefore, it was possible. But this age, it's definitely not possible. No one even knows how to perform such elaborate sacrifices. And no one has any inclination even. We don't even see people going around. Although there are a few people, they like to have havens, they perform. But they do it on a very small scale, a little fire, a little grain, a little ghee or something. And then that's it. And they may charge something. See, therefore it's cheating. I know when we went to South Africa first time, there's a large Indian community there. And they have been separated from India for over 100 years without being allowed to go back to visit India, and also no one from India could come there due to apartheid in their different system. So, The Indian community has been isolated, and therefore anyone among them who claimed to be a priest or a brahmana was accepted as such, even if they were completely unqualified. So with the advent of our movement in South Africa, things started to change, and of course they were getting real knowledge, and these priests were exposed for being what they were. They were holding sacrifices, and they were charging money, and they would chant mantras and perform so-called yagyas, and you brought, you know, goats and chickens and all kinds of animals to them, and this way they would eat them, and they would say that they were for sacrifice. And so the devotees came and said, no, you don't need any of this, you just chant Hare Krishna. That's the only sacrifice you need to perform for this age. And the priests were getting furious. How dare you stop our business? But that's true. In this age, you don't need any of those. All these things are unnecessary and impractical. And it's just a cheating process by the priests. So our movement has become very powerful there, defeating all these so-called priests who are just interested in supporting themselves. So for this age, we don't need anything but chanting the holy names. No other process. This is keep again and again. We have to keep. Therefore, nasteva, nasteva, nasteva means not by karma, not by jnana, not by yoga. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except chanting the holy names of the Lord. In this age, it will be effective. So, we have to accept it. But even still, even though it's not recommended for this age, it is a bona fide system, and it's based on real knowledge. This is it is created by Brahma. It is a Vedic system. And if one knows how to chant the mantras and perform the yajna, then the results will be there. But the scientists today, they're also interested in fruitive activities, but they don't know this system. This system, you can accomplish incredible things. You can even become qualified to go to heavenly planets. You can reach the Svargaloka by performing these sacrifices. Sometimes different kings would perform sacrifices. They would hire the Brahmins for different purposes. Sometimes they wanted a son. So they said, please, my dear Brahmins, perform a sacrifice so that I may get a son. So then the Brahmins were okay. They would chant some mantras, they'd bring some sweet rice, and then they'd imbue mantras in the sweet rice, and then they would say, now bring your queen, whichever queen you want, to give you the son. So he'd bring the queen, she'd get sanctified, she'd eat the sweet rice, and then she'd get a child. Oh, they have, that happened many times. So they can perform these great accomplishments by chanting mantra. The Brahmins once became angry with Vena, son of King Anga. Vena was a demon, but he became the king because his father was so disgusted with him. His father was a very nice king. His mother was bad. She was not very good. She had some bad qualities. Therefore, the son, he inherited her bad qualities. It generally, the idea is that the son generally inherits the mother's qualities and the daughter inherits the father's qualities. So he got the qualities of the bad mother. And he became a horrible demon, tortured everyone, stopped all sacrifices. So the Brahmins tried to rectify him in whatever way they could by good instructions, but he would not listen. So finally they just held a sacrifice, chanted some mantras, and that was the end of Vena. So it's a very subtle process. The Brahmins are so powerful that if they should curse anyone, it would immediately happen. Or if they would bless anyone, it would immediately happen. Now, the scientists today will say, oh, this is hocus pocus, and we don't believe in this. How can we believe that by chanting mantras? But even now, they're discovering different kinds of subtle energies that they didn't know about before, laser energy and microwave, that's sound, if I'm not mistaken, sound waves. And they find that when you bounce these sound waves enough, then you get a lot of heat. What to speak of Brahmastra? That was the idea. By chanting mantra, then by sound vibration, you can concentrate so much heat and energy into that mantra. And you can also specify it. They don't understand this, but it's true. By material sound, subtle sound, one can accomplish heat and this nuclear weapons. What about atomic energy? They've discovered not too long ago that there's so much energy in the atoms. Now they know how to make it explode and heat up and do different things with it. But still they're so... they're really not very advanced. They're just beginning to understand even the material energy because of the process that they're adopting. They're adopting a very gross process of pratyaksha. They only accept things that they can touch and see and taste and experiment with. And because they're impure, they're not allowed to enter into any of these more subtle processes. For example, even the demons formerly were so much more advanced. Hiranyakashipu was a big demon, all impure desires, but he knew that by practicing austerities and yoga, look what he got, he pleased Lord Brahma and he controlled the whole universe. So many demons, Vrikasura became so powerful by worshipping Lord Shiva, offering flesh into the fire. These big demons, they also knew that you can't become powerful just on your own. You need the benediction of a big deva. So most of the demons, they worship Lord Shiva. They want to please Ashutosh because he's easily pleased. And he just gives benedictions. Yes, take it, get away. Leave me alone, take it. Because he doesn't like them, these demons. But it's his policy just to get, to be kind to them. He gives them what they want, even if it's bad. Of course, Vishnu chastised him after the incident of Vrikasura. Lord Vishnu chastised him and said, Lord Shiva, may I make one suggestion? You know, you keep giving out these benedictions to these demons, and sometimes they really create a lot of problems. This time I had to come and save you. If it hadn't been for Lord Vishnu as the Brahmachari, then Lord Shiva might have been destroyed by this Vrikasura. You know, the one who wanted to touch his head. You know the story? So, the demons even knew the art, how to get powers. But nowadays, people don't believe in demigods. The scientists, if you say, worship the demigods and get benefit, they say, oh, we don't believe in demigods. We just go into the laboratory, that's all. Everything's in the lab. So consequently, they're doing their little playful Sputnik business and spaceships, trying to go to the moon by, you know, by this gross method of petroleum and launching, and it's not very successful. It doesn't work very well. It's dubious, doubtful whether they even went. Whereas those who know the subtle science, they just perform some sacrifice. Please the demigods, janti deva bhata deva. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who worship the demigods, they take birth among the demigods. Janti deva bhata devan patrinjanti patrivataha. Those who worship the demigods are the forefathers. They take birth amongst the pitri, pitri planets. Those who worship ghosts and spirits. A lot of people are into ghosts and spirits these days. It's quite popular. So they take birth among the ghosts and spirits. And if one worships Krishna, now this is the point. If by ordinary material mantras with mundane sound vibrations, one can get so much power, imagine the power that is imbued in the transcendental names of the Lord. They have the power to take one out of birth and death, take one beyond the material universe, all the way back to the spiritual world. They have the power to free one from the cycle of birth and death. They permeate all the more gross elements, such as ether and air and mind and intelligence and false ego. Therefore, the Maha Mantra is the most important, and that sacrifice is recommended in this age. And if we chant, then everything will become purified. Because the universe is created from subtle to gross, beginning with sound, tan matra. So it begins with sound, and then the more gross elements, the ether and the air, they are generated from this subtle sound. Oh, if sound, transcendental sound, is utilized, permeate all aspects of the universe, purify everything, and this can also become the spiritual world. It's only the material world because of forgetfulness of Krishna. But by remembrance of Krishna, it becomes spiritual. It's like when Krishna was present, he brought his Dham with him. It was not that Krishna was walking on material place. Wherever Krishna goes is spiritualized. Well, similarly, his holy name and spiritualize everything. So, any questions?
Well, I was thinking so many times, actually, you know, because I didn't really read all the congregational chanting literatures that we have nowadays. But I'm wondering actually how we are dealing with Hindu people. Is that different than dealing, let's say, with Christians? Is there any other approach to them? Since they are a little bit informed about Krishna.
Different approach?
Yes. Have they been treated differently than in our preaching than Christians or something generally?
Well, of course, their conception of many gods is their biggest. It's their biggest problem. They don't understand that Krishna is exclusively the supreme. They think there are many gods. So that offense is a problem for them, not so much for us Westerners. Because Prabhupada told us Krishna is supreme and the others are demigods, we accept it, no problem. Mahabharata, or hearing from their grandmother, and for so many generations, they worship Agni and Shiva and Durga, and they're all equal in Krishna, so they're confused. Anyone who reads Mahabharata will be confused. That's why Narad Muni chastised him. He said, you've given all these Vedas and now everyone's confused. You've done a disservice because they'll think that by worshipping the demigods, they won't know who's supreme. And they'll be after these fruitive activities and you've done a disservice. Really chastised. Heavy chastisement from the spiritual master. So Vyasadeva, he thought, you know, I've compiled all the Vedas and even the Upanishads and the four Vedas, Artha, Rig, Yajur, Sama, the Vedanta Sutra. He presented all the Mahabharata. Even Mahabharata wasn't sufficient because then Narada Muni gave this the clue. You haven't specifically glorified Krishna. You've presented Krishna, but it's not clear who's supreme. So, therefore, you must do that, and that will be Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana, is the most important of all the scriptures because it clearly delineates, without any question, from the beginning to the end, who's the supreme and who are the demigods. Indra is defeated, Brahma is defeated, Shiva is defeated. All the demigods are defeated in Srimad Bhagavatam by one person, Krishna. So there's no question who's supreme. So therefore, the Hindus need to read Bhagavatam. They need to hear. And then they'll understand.
But I've actually been a couple of times visiting, distributing books to a few Hindu temples, and they actually do read Bhagavatam, but their Bhagavatam, without bhakti purports. So, you know, they even, you know, they were not so interested actually to get into Prabhupada books because they don't recognize that instance of bhakti to read.
So the misconceptions then will continue. You need a guru to help you through the forest. When your knowledge, when your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you will become indifferent to all that is being heard and all that is to be heard. So it's you have to transcend the flowery words of the Vedas, promising you heavenly delights on the Svarga Loka and all these things. So they like that. They're attracted by that because that's what they've been taught. But now they're changing by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and his followers and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Things are changing. Intelligent Indians are also taking seriously Krishna consciousness. Generally speaking, yes. That was generally the program.
So in Bhakti Yuga and in this Yuga we can go to enter into Krishna's Lila?
Generally, it's special. It's possible, but it's made very easy in this age. It's not that it was impossible in other situations, but it's a very rare thing. It's like Krishna says, out of many thousands among men, one may know me as I am. It's out of thousands who seek perfection and thousands of those, it's very rare to know Krishna and to enter into Krishna loka.
In that days, people had not the desire because they were just satisfied with meditating on Vishnu.
Meditating on Vishnu is also, you know, of the same absolute transcendental platform. But they were born there because of their particular desire and the opportunities that they were given. So, to realize Krishna means you have to know Krishna. But Krishna only appears on a planet once in a day of Brahma, so it's very rare. And there's so many different forms, of course, the Narayan, Vishnu forms. It's wonderful, but to know Krishna personally is special. It's very, very special. A little difficult to know how fortunate we are, how we've gotten this special opportunity to know Krishna directly.
In that yoga, like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, they are eternal scriptures, eternal knowledge, eternal pastimes of the Lord. They were only not on script in that time, and they were not passed through by speaking from one person to another, but they were there.
Yeah.
Just were waiting till Dwarpa Yuga and Kali Yuga came to manifest itself.
They may be there. But still, people may have particular inclination towards another process or Vishnu. Other questions? Yeah. Someone?
That the experience of the subtle realm, subtle energies, also depends on our purity. Now then, you hear this. You hear it is explained how the plant of the seed of devotional service is planted into the heart, and that. By and gradually watering the plant, it grows. And then it is explained that the plant grows through the material universe and passes all the coverings of the material universe, and ultimately, or not ultimately, but passes also the highest planets in the universe, like Brahma Loka. Comes to the Ramajoti and ultimately finds his resting place at Kulava Vrindavan, at Krishna's lotus feet. So my question is, does it mean that in our practice of chanting that we first have to pass also these highest stages of material consciousness before we can come to the transcendental platform?
You mean like mode of goodness and that? Going to the heavenly planets? Well, when the spirit soul is purified, then he goes back to the spiritual world, but on the way he passes the Svargalokas, passes the heavenly planets, and therefore it's described that sometimes they wish to stop. They say, I want to look at this for a while, I want to be here for a while. So then they may do that. They get all the opportunities. They can also stop at the Brahmajyoti and say, no, I want to stay here for a while. I want to go to the Indraloka for a while. Everything's available to them because they've achieved the highest attainment. So Krishna gives them all freedom. Like Narad Muni. Narad Muni has so much freedom because he's so pure that Krishna trusts him to go anywhere, spiritual world, material world. So he gives him all mystic power, everything he wants. He can go anywhere he wants. Krishna gives freedom according to the qualifications. So one who's so advanced, he has full opportunity. If one is a devotee of Krishna, nothing, no doors are closed to him. He can go wherever he wants. But he's not interested in going to those places for sightseeing or for sense gratification. He just wants to go and just do what his duty is, please Krishna, either in Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha or some other place. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Actually also, in regards that the point is often made that even if we chant the holy name once purely, we immediately have full realization of Krishna.
So, all right.
Is that possible even in our... this locally efficient state, is it possible, for example, to have a moment with pure chanting, or is it only possible after intention of purification?
It may be possible. Depends. The soul, if he becomes inspired and he understands the urgency and the immense need, and it's possible. But generally speaking, the gradual process is the way. But in principle, it can happen at any moment. Therefore, in a sense, a devotee is always praying that he's hoping that maybe I'll become, I'll become eager, I'll become interested. Srila Prabhupada gave a nice example. He said, it's like a young boy. Young boy has sex desire innate within him, but it's not manifest when he's young. So he goes on and he grows up, and on a certain day, somehow or other, sex desire appears. He didn't have to study for it, he didn't have to do any preparation. He just goes on living, and it comes. And suddenly he sees girls differently. So in the same way, that if we go on with our devotional service, in practice, one day we'll have love for Krishna. Because it's innate. Innate means it's there. It's natural. Krishna, prema, nityasiddha Krishna, prema, sadhu, kabanoi, shravanadi, shuddha, chitta, kore, udoi. It's part of our nature to have love for Krishna. But right now it's not manifest because we're not mature. So our devotional service will become mature. Just have to stay alive. That means go on with devotional service. It'll come. We don't know when. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe. Keep trying to increase our intensity. And we'll have love of Krishna, then it won't be a problem, to get up in the morning or to deal with all the services, because it'll be out of ecstasy and attraction. In the beginning, if you ask a little boy to go with the girls, he says, "Oh, I have to go with the girls." But later on, when he gets older, if you ask him to go with the girls, he thinks, "Oh, it's very nice. I like it." Crude example, but the idea is there. Natural attraction, love for Krishna is there, just needs to come out. Any other questions?
Maharaj told that when the Brahmanas would bless that it would immediately happen. And they also say that by serving the other devotees, you make more spiritual advancement in this. Now, is this the same effect as when Brahmanas at that time would bless you?
Yes, the Brahmanas now, a real Brahman Vaishnava, is also very powerful. It's not that when we say that there they were more pure and It's that this is age. This age is just materially not set up for Brahmins to be able to do those kinds of things. You know, make the fires come. And although there are some examples of that too in this age. But it's rare. They generally don't display that. But they do have the power because of being Vaishnavas. A Vaishnava is called, you know, Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha. He's a desire tree. Why? What does it mean? It means he can fulfill your desire. Now, that's misused a lot by people. They touch the feet of a Vaishnava, saintly person, sadhu, and then they ask him for, you know, give me some money, give me, you know, beautiful wife. That's a misuse of the benediction that you can get from a Vaishnava. You shouldn't ask a Vaishnava for those things. You should ask, please give me pure devotional service. Or the other day we were somewhere, I forget, some gentleman came up. We had his little baby. He said, was it here? Felt. I said, please bless my child that become a nice devotee. So, okay. So he wants the blessing. That's what Prabhupada's father did also. Whenever he would meet a sadhu, he would say, please bless my child that he will become a great devotee of Radharani. And he did. So the blessings were effective. He was simple. Father was simple. He did it. He always asked everyone. And look what happened. What kind of a devotee of Radharani did he get? So see the power? But not for things like, you know, getting these material powers. In this age, it's just not very effective, these Brahmins. Because you do have, because it's all material, so then that means they have to learn to chant the mantras perfectly, and no one's doing that. No one's teaching that. And no one knows these mantras anyway. They're practically out of, you know, they're out of use for so long. The only one that's useful is the Maha Mantra. I mean, it's not that these verses here in the scriptures are not of value, but they're transcendental. They're not for material purposes. We don't chant these mantras to get some mundane benefit. Modern.
Maharaj, this question is actually related to yesterday's class. You were explaining the differences between the Paramahamsas and Bhagavacharya, and in the program it was mentioned how the disciples are supposed to look upon his virtue as being Paramahamsa. Is it in this way that we should understand it? Or as virtue master is always Paramahamsa Guru, or these disciples treat him in that way? And
yeah, that word supposed, my understanding of Srila Prabhupada's use of that supposed is that he's supposed to be given the respect of a Paramahamsa. Not that we give him the respect of a private Jagacharya, but no, he's to be, it's supposed, he's expected, he's to be honored. Because we also say Sakshat Hari Tvenasamasta Shastra, the spiritual master is to be honored as much as the Supreme Lord. So certainly the Supreme Lord is a Paramahamsa. He's God. So if we're to honor the spiritual master as much as God, then we should also honor him as being a Paramahamsa.
Everyone should have faith in his spiritual master that he is a Paramahamsa. Otherwise, how he comes to be to his spiritual master to make his choice that he will, this will be my spiritual master. He must have this complete faith, isn't he? Otherwise,
yeah, not that he's a Kanishta or maybe a Madhyam. Because although a spiritual master may think like that, he may think I'm maybe striving to become a Madhyam Adhikari. But if the disciple thinks like that, then it will not be very good for his spiritual advancement. He has to Because what does it mean? Someone who's saving me from the cycle of birth and death, who's taking me back to Krishna, how qualified must he be? He must not just be an ordinary person. So that's why when people go around and criticize present-day spiritual masters, they're actually doing a great disservice. And no disciple should listen. Anyone who listens will have his spiritual, how did Prabhupada describe it? You'll be spiritually scarred by hearing such criticism. Therefore, these people should not be tolerated. They can go somewhere else, say what they want, but actually they're doing a disservice. Because the faith in the spiritual master is the most important thing. And anything that weakens that faith, they may say, well, yes, but the truth hurts, but, you know, you have to hear it, and this and that. So, but they may not be able to see that the present-day disciples are making spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. They'll say, well, it's all due to Prabhupada, has nothing to do with anyone else. That's all right. They want to glorify Krishna or glorify Prabhupada. That's nice. But at the same time, it shouldn't be at the cost of criticizing the other devotees who are also assisting. It's like you could say, I remember when I was a new devotee, for example, once a devotee was glorifying Srila Prabhupada, how nice, how wonderful it was that he came over and he took the trouble, you know, to come over from India at an old age. And I was new devotee, I said, well, he had to come, didn't he? His spiritual master ordered him. So the devotee didn't appreciate that at all. He didn't appreciate my nonchalant way of, well, didn't he was just carrying out orders, so why does he get any credit? That's what I was... I didn't mean to be offensive, but the devotee didn't appreciate it. He said, no. He said it was his own causeless mercy that he did that. Yes, the guru gave him the order, but he took the order. And that is his mercy. So don't minimize it and just think that it's something mechanical. The spiritual master's mercy is not just something mechanical. So if we want to minimize the present or the followers of Srila Prabhupada, their contribution, well, but what if Prabhupada doesn't minimize it? What if Prabhupada gives them all credit? What if Prabhupada says, yes, they're doing wonderfully. They're doing just what I've told them to do, and therefore it's successful. And so many people are coming, and they're presenting the same teachings as I've given. What if Prabhupada appreciates them? Then what kind of a disciple are you if you criticize them? Srila Prabhupada saying they're doing wonderfully. They're distributing books. They're worshiping the deity. They're maintaining the temples. They're expanding. They're preaching in so many nice ways. They're distributing prasadam. They're risking their lives. They're following the principles. They're chanting. They're worshiping the deity. They're translating the books in so many languages. Prabhupada's pleased, and you're not pleased. You're saying they're useless. They're not doing anything. They're just... So then, the question is, who's... It's obvious Prabhupada's pleased. Param parichiyate. You judge a fruit by the... Judge a tree by the fruit. So many nice devotees are coming. Means something's going correctly. Something's going right. Books are being... Every year, our book distribution is increasing. Now the Russians are all taking Krishna consciousness. All the Eastern Europeans. Now India is just... beautiful center in Bangalore, Ahmedabad, Delhi, Mayapur city is just, I mean, seems like they put up a building every few minutes. While we were there, they put up, did you notice? They put up half a building just in the few weeks we were there. Big, huge building. So, this movement is definitely alive and well. And anyone who doesn't want to give any credit to Prabhupada's sincere followers and prefers to criticize them, then maybe there's some envy there in their heart. Maybe. Doesn't mean that you're minimizing Srila Prabhupada's glory by appreciating his followers. Does that make any sense? That would be a material calculation. That by appreciating Srila Prabhupada's assistance also. Actually, Prabhupada said, I was present in a president's meeting in Berkeley in 71. He said, if you become glorious, that will be my glory. So he wanted his followers to be glorious by preaching work and by spreading Krishna consciousness, and then he would be glorified by that. And it's true. Prabhupada is now streets in Delhi. One of the main streets is named Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg. These things are happening. So many things. Prabhupada's glory is being spread all over the three worlds by the work of his disciples and grand disciples. So that is not that we want to take credit because it's all his mercy, but we don't appreciate when someone just criticizes the devotees who've dedicated their lives for propagating the holy names of the Lord. That's an offense. And so we don't like to tolerate those offenses. Any other? Yeah, so don't be so liberal that you just like to hear everything. Hear all the latest. So what's your opinion? No, we want to hear the opinion of those who are in good standing and whose heart is free from the tendency to fault find and criticize. Because if you hear from those who like to fault find and criticize Vaishnavas, then your spiritual life will be curtailed, scarred. I use that example because once some disciples, they were in the association of some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, and they were minimizing Prabhupada in that assembly. When they came back, they told Prabhupada, he said, yes, you are scarred. Having heard that, so we should be a little careful where we go, what kind of talks we listen to, who we associate with. Lord Chaitanya chastised that Mukunda so much because that Mukunda liked to go all different places and listen to different lectures and different associates. Lord Chaitanya said, I don't ever want to see him again. Don't ever let him come in here again. Finally, because Mukunda was such an extraordinary person, but Lord Chaitanya would not see him. And then, you know the story, he finally won. Because Lord Chaitanya is so soft-hearted, Mukunda won him over. Finally agreed to see him again, but otherwise he was not going to see him. So
we may listen from saintly persons, I think. That is not.
Yeah. Saintly persons will not criticize. Saintly persons will appreciate the work of a Vaishnava. They'll not criticize.
Followers are not always freed from this. Hmm? Followers of these saintly persons are not always freed from this vices.
Followers of saintly persons?
Yes.
I mean neophytes?
Yes.
Neophytes are neophytes. That's what it means to be a neophyte. They don't understand everything. So they can be... They need to be trained and need to be educated. It's like a child. A child may say something that's not very polite. A child says, oh, you have a big nose. Hare Krishna. Say, father, he has a big nose. So the father says, son. So he has to explain to him, son, you have to be polite. You have to, you know, certain things you have to be a little more careful. Of course, everyone knows as a child, and so you tolerate, but gradually he'll be trained. It's not taken so seriously when a child makes a statement like that. It can be forgiven. Neophytes can be forgiven. Yes?
It seems that some people, they have a little bit kind of difficulty to understand that, you know, Western disciples of Prabhupada could be also bona fide representatives of Prabhupada, not only people that they have taken birth in India like that.
Yeah. But not so many anymore.
Not so many.
No, Well, because we see, even we were speaking yesterday, that so many cultured Indian families now are also taking. Did I tell you that Srila Prabhupada's granddaughter took initiation at Mayapur this year?
No.
Yeah, from a Western-born spiritual master. So, it's very nice. So many big, exalted, like the Mafatlal family, have all taken one of the most famous, cultured families of India. They're certainly one of the most wealthy. And they've all taken initiation from Western-born Vaishnava. So it seems that isn't so much a concern. Some people, of course, may still have that prejudice, but more and more that's being broken down.
You don't take spiritual master from the core of the scheme. You take spiritual master from your heart is straightest to it.
That's right.
Any other?
Sometimes by accident to pass by or somewhere, if you hear criticism, it's already polluting, but how do you can deal with this?
You just go on with devotional service and try to try to avoid it in the future.
You can say something to
them. If you're strong enough to defeat them, then yes, you should do that. Not just get in an argument. That's not defeating. Defeating means you can actually convince them. But if you just get in a big argument, that's not necessarily the best thing to do. But just like there are some examples where someone may have made some statement and another devotee who's very powerful could defeat that. Point out that this is incorrect, and then the person, he accepts. Well, if you can do that, that's better. In the case of, for example, Sati, her father was blaspheming Lord Shiva, so she couldn't tolerate it. She went there, she tried to convince him, but he wasn't listening. So then she just gave up her life. She committed suicide because she had heard this offense. She had heard the blasphemy of her husband and spiritual master, Lord Shiva. And being so pure, she couldn't tolerate that. So the Nectar Devotion gives different instructions for different people. For Kshatriya, you can cut out the tongue of the offender. You just take a knife and cut it out. That takes care of that. That's a suitable way of dealing with the offender. You want to offend the Vaishnava? Okay, we cut your tongue out. And for Brahmins, they would close their ears and run away. So you can do that. Chant. And for someone like Sati, she wasn't a Brahmin, she wasn't a Kshatriya, so she committed suicide. At least go away. Or if you're expert preacher, you can try to defeat them and point out.
We see nowadays there are many powerful demons, mostly in governmental positions, big companies playing position like that. So do these people are allowed by Kali to come and become so powerful? They have some credits by worshipping demigods, or what is this really?
Oh yes, they're given, they have some pious credits now, they're using them up very quickly. For a while they get to enjoy, but it won't last long. At the way they're, it's like someone who goes to Las Vegas and he's the son of a millionaire, so he's got, $10 million. And he goes, you've heard of Las Vegas? You know what Las Vegas is?
Yeah.
Gambling place. So he goes to Las Vegas and, he's staying in the hotel, and he's going down, he's gambling, and you know, every day he's losing $250,000. So within 10 days, 2 weeks, it's all gone, all finished. It's all gone. So these demons nowadays, they have some credits from pious activities in the past, but they're using it all up very quickly, and they'll be kicked out soon. Now don't ask how soon. Everyone wants to know.
Yeah.
Now, when Krishna wants.
Do the demigods are, you know, doing something to help this mission, I mean, tangibly?
Of course. Sure. They're making all the nice arrangements for the devotees to go on Sankirtan, and for the food to grow, for the water to come, the air to blow. It's all, the demigods are doing their part. They're doing fine. Sun's shining, giving us light and heat. Sun's rising at the right time every morning. So everything, yeah, demigods are doing their duty.
Because they are so powerful, I think, you know, if they would, you know, exert their powers.
You think they should do more?
I think so, yeah.
Might be a little bit presumptuous on your part. And after all, they're great devotees. I think they know what they're doing. They're doing what Krishna wants them to do. Better we do more instead of... We can pray, let me do more. I'm the one that's not doing enough. Not that, you know, Surya should get, you know, should, come on, Surya. Should hop to it here. No, they're doing fine. We're the ones that need to do more.
Well, that's a nice example from someone who also, in an elderly home I worked, and there was a woman who was so proud of her son always. And he was like a big bank who was in the director or so, or a boss, not a bank boss. He was coming in the newspapers and he had a photo with the president he was standing on, and he was looking really like he had a medal or so on his chest, and he's looking with a really red face, very puffed up. He was so proud of it, you know, this medal. He was completely.
Yeah.
And then someday I came again to clean the room. I was cleaning her room, and she was very upset. She was crying and so. And then, have you read the newspaper? And she showed the newspaper. So. And so it was with an accident, car accident. And one time he was dead, you know. And then she talked about it. He didn't even enjoy his... He had just bought a new home or so. Very big villa or so. So you are here, and the next moment you can be gone. You know. It's really very relative.
Any other? Well, it wouldn't be so practical, because if you cut out his tongue, then you'll probably go to prison for 30 years. And then... But formerly, Kshatriya, you know, it was his duty to uphold law and order. And, you know, like if Ramachandra or any of those great kings, if they cut someone's tongue out and anyone wanted to challenge them, well, they could also defeat them. So it's like when Krishna walked through Mathura, and that washerman started chastising them, saying, you know, these clothes are not for you, you're just village boys, you're dirty, these are for the king. And he went on like that, and Krishna just didn't appreciate it, so he cut off his head. But no one could do anything. Kansa was in charge, but he killed Kansa also. So, you know, Kshatriya is not afraid of anyone. A Kshatriya does the right thing. And he's not afraid of anyone who disagrees, because he's upholding the scriptures. He's upholding the Lord's desire. Therefore, he's called Naradeva. A king is actually the representative of God. So for a real Kshatriya to act according to proper principles, anyone blaspheming a Vaishnava, a real Kshatriya would not tolerate. it's not possible to hear a Vaishnava blasphemed. So this is a fallen age. Nowadays everyone's blasphemed, everyone's criticized Vaishnava. They have no appreciation. But therefore there needs to be some education. We're trying to educate the devotees and in turn educate society that don't criticize God and don't criticize his devotees. They're very exalted. If you want to make spiritual progress. Our best thing, if someone blasphemes, we just go away. Just don't associate with them. That's practical. You can do that. At least that way we don't incur any more damage. Okay? Any other? Yes?
There's one Dutch politician, and he's really he's becoming more powerful. And I know he's rather psychic, you know, the conference is also like reading minds rather people, so he can, like that, he can, you know, like intelligence and confirm his position more and more. And he's atheistic, you know, very atheistic. So I was wondering where does that come from? This kind of power, is that karma kanda, or is that?
Of course, the powers come from Krishna. And as far as what he did to deserve it, some pious activity. Yeah, some fruit of activity he did, some pious thing. Now he's gotten this position that he can control others and enjoy himself for the time being. Yeah. That's where they get it. Some perform yoga practice to get their powers. Right? It's like this Rajneesh. He was a Kundalini yogi, but he wasn't able to complete it. He wasn't perfect. But because he had achieved some level of being successful in his practice of Kundalini Yoga, he got some powers. He could control people's minds a little bit, a little bit of mystic. So therefore he used it, but look what happened. He used up his credits real quick. A little bit of yoga, a little bit of siddhis, like this Sai Baba. He has a little siddhi, maybe he can make something appear. So he's using it for sense gratification, so he's using it up very quickly. So through yoga or through jnana or through karma, you may get some benefits and then you use it up. Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.